pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I'm your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends, in the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird Jeff Bell.
Good day. Hello. Hi. I'm the problem. Hello. It's me.
I love Taylor Swift, you guys. I'm an accidental Swiftie.
I'm like a booster. I support her work, okay. But I don't really participate.
That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. We'll accept it.
I'm a distant admirer of her amazing career.
But I'll tell you one thing. I would seriously pay for the A ticket to watch her and Travis Kelce bone. I mean, that has got to be an athletic undertaking, the likes of which we've never seen before.
Indeed.
I'll bet there's like fucking spotlights from heaven and an angel chorus.
Ask me. Ask me. Yeah,
I can't.
God himself pops in. I bless this bone. You two can sin all you want.
Yep. You're too pretty not to.
Oh my goodness.
Reminds me of the Garden of Eden.
What's new?
You don't want to talk about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift boning anymore?
No, I don't.
And that's why you're the adult supervision.
That's why you're here.
No, I just know if I let you guys go down this rabbit hole, it's going to take forever to climb back out of it. Heaven's sake, we'll be talking about everybody's boning soon. We'll no longer be a comic book podcast. It'll just be celebrity boning theories.
That's our next podcast.
Coming up next on the D-Man Media.
I'm firing up Photoshop as we speak.
I think it would wind up being our biggest downloaded show.
Yeah, we could call it the Pete Davidson Files.
Exactly.
And just talk about celebrities having intimate relations.
Just keep your hands off that little girl.
So let's talk about Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi.
Oh, yeah. Serious boning.
Hey, Ellen. Ellen.
How's everybody's week been?
Okay, fine.
Come on, Jeff.
What? No, Ellen did a nude scene with Sharon Stone in a movie once.
Really?
Yeah. They played a couple.
Huh.
Yeah, it was like one of those things that it happens and it's like, huh. I mean, that's pretty nice for something I've never thought about in my entire life. Okay,
it's
go
not,
on.
Wasn't on my bucket list. No, it wasn't.
No, but it's, you know what? It filled a nice niche.
Yeah. Now I'm intrigued what movie that would have been. Look at the rabbit hole you took us down.
Well, how about this? John, you start with talking to us about our weeks, and I'll look it up.
Oh. All right.
That was your week, Jess.
It was fine. It was fine. Work has been crazy busy. Mom had surgery. She's doing fine. Nobody worry. Don't panic. It was mild and minor, and everything's fine. But, yeah. Just, I didn't get any time to read comic books because with spring break and shuttling kids around and work being crazy, I was a vegetable. I did watch a lot of television though, so I'll be strong in the TV game this week, you guys.
Yeah.
Super strong in it. How about you, Jeff? Anything to report from the comic book store world?
The movie's called If These Walls Could Talk 2. It was a sequel. That's all. I just tell
you. I have to watch two movies.
Okay. If These Walls Could Talk. I'm not adding it to a watch list. Don't worry.
If These Walls Could Talk 2. Not the original. The second one.
I might need the original for the plot. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to look into that. How was your week, though?
I had a weird week at work this week. Just odd customers. One of the treats of running a store that has a public bathroom is being able from time to time to ask the question, how'd they get poop up there?
Oh, no. Again? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess I'm just not bendy enough. So, it's all scatological this week. Like, I had a customer, and I won't out who it is, but, you know, he's standing at the counter talking to me and just rips one of the longest, loudest, wettest sound of farts of all time. Doesn't break stride, just keeps talking like it didn't happen. Slowly, you know, I'm being maced.
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, hey, I got to go check something in the back room. He's like, yeah, okay. Go in the back room. What the hell is that? You know.
That's the next life goal, you see. Billy Crystal used to do a bit about that, about his grandfather who couldn't hear and he couldn't feel that he was farting, but he just farted all the time. It's just like, oy vey. He just did this joke about his grandfather, and he was like, yeah, and then he turned around and go, whoa, whoa, you feel all right. What's wrong with you?
Mine was a story someone told on a thing about being a teacher for the deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids learning for the first time that farts made noise.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And how mortified the entire class was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, weird week at work. Just more and more stories like that. We're doing, though, up at Volts, Dr. Volts, we're getting ready for Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, that's going to
run up. Yeah, there's going to be some pretty cool shit going on there, including we're doing our big Free Comic Book Day giveaway. Every 10 you spend gets you an entry. And then we do a drawing at the end of Free Comic Book Day and give away a bunch of cool shit, like a $200 gift certificate, box of trading cards, whatever. Your choice from a selective list, but still. Volts is, we're getting ready for Free Comic Book Day, and really, I'm looking forward to seeing that many happy kids. That's part of it that I like.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Sure. I do not, for the most part, appreciate about 40% of the parents. You know? I do not appreciate the dudes that just load up an armful of shit and walk by the counter on their way out the door, and you're like, whoa, whoa, none of that's free. You're a comic book shop, but it's Free Comic Book Day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So books that say free, those are free. Because last year, we spent about 40 minutes running around the store putting up little signs going, this is not free, this is not free, this is not free. And I still had three people try and do that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, come in, ransack my store. You bet. What fun.
Still, I would suggest still put up the signs.
Oh, I will.
You know, they're a deterrent, and they're enough of a deterrent. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my week. Well, what'd you do?
Yeah, if Roger was telling me a fib, I should be there representing.
Oh, so you're going to take the thing that I was waiting to tell people about and go ahead and just dump it on the floor right in front of all of us.
I don't
spoilers.
Know. I don't know if I'm actually on the schedule or not. It was just a conversation I had with Rogers. So.
No, I'll be honest with you. I have no fucking idea. I don't think they do either.
And naturally, no other conversation has happened since then. Because, again, we were talking about Roger. So, don't know. Yeah. But I did go ahead and order some new number ones.
Oh, good.
Woohoo! So that'll be awesome.
It's funny the way they usually package them in packs of 25, but I guess they couldn't fit all 100 into the USPS $8 box, which isn't $8 anymore, as we've learned. So they went up. This is a wrap of 10, and I was like, oh, I told Jeff he could pick up 10 from me. put on the shelf. So
yay!
I got your wrap right here.
There you go.
It's good that you wrap. Great. I'm glad that you remember these important details.
Yes. Yes.
Always wrap.
So always wrap. So yeah, I'll have that for you.
Go on, Jocelyn. Laugh out loud. You know you wanna.
I can't.
Always make sure you wrap.
Yep.
It's very important, actually. Yep. Yes.
So anyway, that's ready, and you know I'd run out of number ones with the last shipment to my backers, and so yeah, I figured, well, I'll pick up some more number ones. I may just go ahead and do that with 2 and 3 and 4 in. And these are Grolix editions, so all the swear words are got little, you know, symbols instead. Mm. We call those Grolixes in the biz. That's biz talk. That's inside baseball talk. We call them Grolixes. So I call these my Grolix editions. And that way, when little kids come up, sweet little girls who want to read a female forward comic book, I don't go. I don't look at their parents and say, "Is it okay if there's swears in here?"
Right.
I can just say, absolutely, honey, you need, here's a comic, you're going to love it. Yeah.
Nice, I love it.
And, I don't know, today was last week was my last week at OSHA, officially. I only got 2 days because they were shorting my hours. I got a text from a former coworker, on Friday, who said, "You missed the morning meeting." And I go, "Yeah, well, if they'd given me the hours, I would have been there." And he said, "Yeah, basically our manager broke down in tears about all the people she was losing."
Wow.
And used my catchphrase that I would end all the meetings with. I'd always yell, "Go team," when we wrap up meetings.
Aww.
Because it would get everybody laughing, you know, the whole goal is to. And it really helped when we had one of our contract groups, when they took over, they assigned a new manager, and he was the most dour motherfucker I'd ever met. And his meetings were the most somber, just, and the way he would talk, it was like everybody felt threatened. And so we get to the end of that first meeting where he was doing that. And I was like, I can't help myself. And I just shouted out, "Go team." She could not hit the mute button fast enough because we all just started laughing because it was just that you just needed that tension breaker that he had created. So yeah, she said your catchphrase and then broke into tears. And I was like, aw, that's both happy and sad. So
yeah,
now
no
I'm
kidding.
Now I'm waiting. I've got had a guy reach out to me, a recruiter reach out to me, was putting me up for a position. Apparently, they didn't think I had enough writing experience.
Did you send him a copy of Shaolin Nun number one?
Well, I mean, it's you know, it's content writing, it's corporate writing, and I'm like, you mean my 30 years as a you know, technical writer and corporate writer is not enough writing experience for them? He goes, I don't know, dude, write something up and we're going to sit. And do you have a portfolio you could show him? And I said, well, yeah, my portfolio address is at the bottom of my resume. He goes, oh yeah, we reformat your resumes. I'm like, of course you do. Cause that's what these kind of companies do all the time. So I made sure it was in the, I wrote basically a cover letter going through everything I'd done, all my writing work that I'd done professionally, you know, in the corporate space. So they could see that I know what I'm doing. You really aren't, you know, you're not taking a big risk hiring me basically. And that was it. So now I got to wait and see if next week, if they accept it or if they reject me completely. If they do, well, that's just one down, you know. If they do accept me, I got to go through a little bit of a lengthy onboarding process, which may push right up against my trip in May. Ooh. So, yeah, I'll have to talk to unemployment about that and see if I could continue getting money, even though I've got a job about to happen without having to keep making job contacts. We'll see. That's been the fun of my week. A lot of laying around, or not laying around, sitting around, just trying to get myself re-motivated to do things again. It's funny. I was far more motivated when I got laid off originally for those 3 weeks because I was anticipating I'd have a job to go back to and everything was going to be fine. Had no idea my Teflon coating had worn off completely. So it was far more productive. And then last week I was like, I don't want to do anything. All right. We got a big piece of news in this next segment, which is a follow-up last week. So let's get to it.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
If you tuned into The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on one of the episodes last week, he ended it in tears and just ended it by saying, you know, good night. And then, you know, off he wandered. Well, it turned out that his executive assistant, a woman by the name of Amy Cole, who is in betwixt my age and your age, sir.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I hate hearing those words.
Yeah. She was 53 years old. The show paid tribute to Cole at the end of Monday night's show with a title card that read, dedicated to our dear friend Amy Cole, 1970 to 2024. From what I understand, I believe it was cancer.
Aww.
Probably.
Yeah.
Cancer sucks.
Yep. Audience members that attended the show reported that the otherwise jovial taping took a serious turn at the end when Colbert asked the crowd to hold their applause, and he appeared to be at a loss for words before tearfully saying goodnight. Mm. So, that sucks. That's really sad.
Yeah. You know?
I have had an executive assistant before. And you get really close to the point that I will be marrying mine next year.
I was going to say, you got super close.
Diane Crittenden, the Star Wars casting director, has passed away at 82 years old. She's the reason we have, you know, Mark Hamill. She's the reason we had Carrie Fisher. She's the reason we have Harrison Ford. You know, she was part of that group that did that work. But she also collaborated with Terrence Malick, Peter Weir, and Sam Raimi. Veteran casting director. Helped the ensemble cast for the first Star Wars film, as well as movies by Malick, Weir, and Raimi. He's died at the age of 82 after multiple battles with cancer. Crittenden said in a 2019 interview with Empire that she and the casting team for Star Wars saw auditions from over 3,500 actors for Lucas's iconic film before settling on the legendary trio of, look at that, Hamill, Ford, and Fisher to play Luke, Han, and Leia. So, other famous films that Crittenden cast include Spider-Man 2, Thin Red Line, Days of Heaven, Three Men and a Baby, Murphy's Romance, Witness, you know, that one wasn't hard for her though. She just went, oh yeah, Harrison Ford, he'll do it. You know, we're buddies.
Well, I
made him famous.
Some of those other movies, and I'm like, wow, she really nailed the casting on those.
Yeah, she was good.
I can't imagine anybody else. Like Murphy's Romance is a weird little. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie. It's actually one of my favorite little romantic comedies from back in the day. And it's
Sally Field. I have seen it.
And Jim Rockford. I can't remember the actor's name, but yeah. it's a December or January, December kind of romance.
James Garner.
And in it all, playing Sally Field's son before any of these other movies he's famous for, like
Lost Boys,
vampire one, Lost Boys, is Corey Haim, just there, just playing this kind of moody kid, this moody teenage kid, and I was like, damn, this is, and I like the movie a lot. I really enjoy watching it, and it's funny because it's such a redneck kind of movie, but I just really enjoy it. So, And James Garner just sells the movie. And again, can't imagine that movie with anybody else in those roles. it just doesn't work for me. Spider-Man 2. Hello. Let's just find the perfect guy to play Otto Octavius. Yeah, let's just find the perfect guy.
Yeah. That's true. He was really good in that role.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of the casting was so easy because it's like, well, just bring everybody from the last movie forward that survived. But the casting the villain was just that moment of, oh, you have picked the perfect guy to play that role.
Well, Alfred Molina is so fucking talented. Mm-hmm. It's nice that he would, you know, deign to be in one of these fun movies and then do it again, you know, for No Way Home.
Well, and he took it seriously. I mean, you liked him. That's the sad part, is we liked him as the villain, and it made his character so much more compelling because we wanted him to actually have a win somehow without being evil. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Sad loss.
Okay.
Here we go, guys.
It's time to upset the comics gate, guys. Mm-hmm. We talked about Ed Piskor, I think 2 weeks ago.
Oh, it was just last week.
Was it just last week?
Last week. Yeah.
Where a couple of women that work in the industry called him out for inappropriate behavior and grooming.
Yes.
Ed chose to react to that by writing a very nasty note, basically blaming anyone but himself, and then committed suicide at the age of 41. That Ed Piskor was a talent is not for debate.
No.
Oh, no.
You know?
No.
He was a weird dude, and I read his stuff, and I found it, you know, quite very readable, enjoyable. Red Room was a little weird, but, you know, I can still see the genius behind it.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, come on, dude. You know, you fucked up. Own it. Yeah. Apologize. Move forward. Keep your career. Stay alive.
Well,
don't be an asshole.
The one thing I got from this that really, I mean, it struck close to home for me. Is the allegations came out, within like no time at all from the allegations coming out, he lost like all these opportunities. They just went away. You know, he had an art show coming up in Philadelphia, I think, where he's from, a gallery show, and the gallery said we can't do this now because of these allegations. And his best friend, he thought, did, you know, immediately cut ties with him because they had been doing this podcast together, and he cut ties with him because of the allegations. And a publisher was going to pick up a new book from him and cut ties. And so it's just one of those where it's like, it just can go so quickly. I watched that happen with Utah Repertory Theater Company. When we got that guy wrote his manifesto against us after trashing our set. And within a day, we had at least two big opportunities dry up. One quit. One just told us we can't work with you anymore, just the same way Ed Piskor got it. We also had our brand new board members all just said, I quit. I can't be part of this. And it was like, we're like, we haven't even had a chance to respond before they all were done. And it was like, it just happened so fast.
To me, though, that's completely different than this scenario. Like, this
it is.
In my opinion, Ed Piskor, is this a tragedy that he opted for suicide? Absolutely. But he needed to own his actions. This is his consequence. He did these things. He's been called out for them. The consequence is now that his name is mud, and how he chose to react to it is now why we're here.
Right.
Like, that's a consequence to an action. And frankly, as we see more and more women and people willing to speak up about inappropriate behavior, we're going to see more and more people opt for a bad choice for their consequences, for their right. actions.
And I mean, we watch that over and over again.
Right, right.
It's never come to this. It's not really ever come to this kind of tragic end. But at the same time, it's that. I'm not saying he didn't do anything wrong. No, absolutely not. No, I know he did. He was in the wrong here. I'm just saying it's amazing how quickly all this can happen. That's what I'm kind of reflecting on is it's amazing how quickly the court of public opinion can meet, can pass judgment, can convict you. And all of a sudden your whole world just changes like that. And yeah, consequences should be that quick when it's this bad. But it was just, I was like, wow, I know exactly what that was like. What he's talking about, how quickly it all died. I'm like, dude, you did wrong, but I get it. I get that part. That one, we're just going to outline that one little part. I get that, how quickly it can happen, you know? And it's amazing to me. That's all. It used to take a long time. And when we look at some of these other actors who have done wrong, it's like, why haven't they had as quick of a consequential ending as like Ed Piskor and some others have had, you know? And then we wind up, you know, with those who get accused and then it turns out, oh yeah, that was a quick jump. That was a quick jump to judgment there. And others where we're like, nope.
Well, and what it comes down to now is that the women who spoke out are under death threats. They're being doxxed. You've got the comics guys going apeshit. As far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm sorry that he did it. I think that all it did was cement his guilt.
Absolutely.
I think if he hadn't killed himself, hadn't martyred himself in that way, I think there still would have been some doxxing. And there still would have, you know, especially with his letter. Because he was really strong. You know, he said some really strong words against the second woman who came out. He admitted his dipshit with the first girl.
Sort of.
Right. Sort of. I was going to say, I didn't read his letter, so I've not read his letter.
Well, the best we have on the letter is not a full reprint. The best we have on the letter was fucking, what's his name, Liefeld, reading it out loud while basically, you know, cheerleading his behavior.
Well, oh, really? Rob Liefeld?
Yeah.
Rob Liefeld, are you shocked? It was a moment. It was kind of that. He was like, I get it, kind of thing. And I get it. And he does say, you know, people make mistakes. I'm like, well, yeah, but there's mistakes and there's mistakes.
And this
I mean, with the girl, with the young girl, the grooming and the one who she posted like their conversations.
Right. Anonymously.
You know, and that's some serious. I mean, that's a serious allegation. And even Piskor in his letter admitted, yeah, I should have cut it off once I knew what her age was.
Right.
But it was the pandemic and I was lonely. And I'm like, dude, that you can't use that as an excuse. Not when they're underage. It was that, you know, they make mistakes. I'm like, yeah, they make mistakes, but this was egregious and criminal. So
anyway, it's fucked up.
It is.
It's super fucked up. It made me like twice as mad as I was in the first place, especially If Liefeld's not making up the note, and I don't think he has the creative talent to make up a note like that, you know, I mean, he really did. He's like, you people did this. You people who got mad at me did this. You people who thought that what I did was wrong did this. You know, he blamed everybody but himself.
Right.
And the only responsibility he took was, yeah, I probably should have stopped talking to the child, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And it's all your fault, Internet.
It's
like,
dude,
turn your social media off, duck your head for a month, you know, make your fucking apology. Feel bad for what you did.
Yep.
you know, and move on.
If there's got to be a court case, do the court case, you know, anything, just move on. And then, you know, obviously guys like Rob Liefeld will give you a second chance. So,
yep.
Wasn't he starting his own imprint? So he could have had Ed Biskor come back and draw for him and stuff.
Yeah. Frank Miller lost his fucking mind and turned into an absolute gibbering racist. And we're still selling his shit at the shop.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
there's still a publisher that puts out Frank Miller's work.
Well,
I think Frank it's Miller's called, behind
I think
it.
It's called Frank Miller Publishing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and, you know, but still.
And honestly, it's like, well, Miller, there's Miller. And like I said, Liefeld was starting his own imprint. Somebody's going to give you would have given you a job, Ed. That's all I'm saying. But after a cooling off period. Because as I've said this quite a few times, favorite line from my friend Drew's play about this kind of thing happening is the story gets covered. The story will be buried in the dust from everybody running to be outraged at the next story.
Right.
It just, people forget about it so quickly now. It's like that's why it's always shocking to me. It's shocking to me how quickly the actions happen. And then when you bring it up in a year, they're like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. It's like, you kind of remember that. Yeah, it's crazy. It's just insane how quickly we react to things now.
Hey, that's it for the news.
All right, let's take a little break. And when we come back, we're heading to Tinseltown.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs
and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger.
I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Tell me. There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
All right, what did you been... What have you been watching on the TVs this week, guys?
I've watched so much stuff, you guys. It was ridiculous. Just for funsies, I rewatched Golden Circle, Kingsman Golden Circle, because that's just a great movie. We put on, you guys, did you watch Renfield yet? Have you guys seen it?
No.
Not yet.
Oh, my God. Oh, it was ridiculously good. It was so dumb that it was good. Nick Cage is just doing the best Nick Cage of all time. So, yeah. So watch Renfield because it was awesome. I did manage to make it into movie theaters to see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And it was a Ghostbusters movie. You guys, again, like I said last week, I don't understand why everybody thinks every single movie has to be the biggest, best, most perfect movie they've ever seen.
Right. Yeah.
This was a fun ride. This was a popcorn movie. This was me munching on popcorn, enjoying 2 hours of not thinking about the outside world. It was exactly what I wanted out of a Ghostbusters movie that combined their new cast and their old cast, right? Like, I really liked this movie. I will watch this movie in the future. It's a great, I don't know what to watch. Oh, look, Frozen Empire. Let's put that on because it's a great movie. So I liked it. Go see it if you haven't. And then I started a rewatch of Doctor Who season 5, which is our first season with Matt Smith. So I started that with my teenager, you guys.
Aww.
So yeah, so we're about 6 episodes in.
That just had its anniversary. The Fish Fingers and Custard.
Yes, Fish Fingers and Custard was almost 14 years ago that season dropped. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so we're doing a fun
Some of my favorite Matt Smith was that first season of.
I was gonna say I really love the storyline of the first season going into season six. So I'm excited that we're on this rewatch because my mini doesn't remember this because they were a year old when it came out. So, you know, so it's been fun to do that rewatch with them. How about you, Jeff? What'd you watch this week?
Finished season three of Stranger Things. Did not care for the giant melty people monster. Was not at any point was I frightened. But I am told that season four is a goddamn work of art, and so I'm looking forward to that. In comedy, I watched a bunch of different shit, including a Bill Ingvall special that was way funnier than it had any right to be. And to be honest, the only reason I started it was because they shot it at the Eccles here downtown.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was interesting. So it was cool to see a theater that I like a lot. And Bill Engvall, it's his farewell stand-up special.
Oh.
He's retiring. And it was funny. I mean, I laughed out loud several times. It was funny as fuck. Also watched Trevor Wallace's Pterodactyl because he was on After Midnight last week. Mm-hmm. And he was funnier on After Midnight. I'll be honest. There were some seriously hard laugh moments in his stand-up special. But for the most part, you know, I enjoyed him more on After Midnight. Watched a movie called The Beautiful Game with Bill Nighy. It's about the Homeless World Cup that they hold a 4-on-4 soccer tournament. And the players are made up of homeless people. And it's real. It's a real thing that happens, which kind of blew my mind. And I couldn't decide if I was, up for it or not up for it. I was like, oh, is that exploitative or is that helpful? You know, because they didn't really cover any of the things like, once you're done at the Homeless World Cup, you get an apartment, yay, or something like that.
Right. I
mean, you just get home and they drop you off at the airport and they're like, do you want to walk from here? You got nowhere to go. I don't know. So I'm looking into that a little bit more, but it's called The Beautiful Game, and it was very sweet. It was a very good movie. And then, of course, which we could either talk about as transition to you, sir, or talk about when you're done, Star Trek Discovery, first two episodes.
We could do it as a transition to me.
So. Oh, my God, I'm so good. Oh, I'm so happy.
I'm so happy about it. Oh, my God, I love that.
Great opener.
The incredible action-packed opener. And just, oh my God, all of it. They took a page from Picard, giving us a kind of a controversial, I don't know if I like him, other captain, you know?
I love him.
I'm like, this is my new Shaw, isn't it? I bet this is my new Shaw. And one of the YouTube review shows I watch for Star Trek mentioned he was in Battlestar Galactica, but I can't remember him.
Yeah, he was a Cylon.
Was he a Cylon?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't really remember much of that, so I didn't watch it as much. So yeah. I watched everything once up to a certain point, and then it got yoinked from streaming services because when it ran, I was in my I will not have cable in my house. And there was no streaming service to watch it on. So I wound up catching it much later and enjoying it. But yeah, I only managed to watch everything once and then it was done. And now it's kind of like, I remember a little bit of it, but not as much as I should. Yeah.
The only thing you have to remember is that Katie Sackhoff was ridiculously hot.
Oh, Katie Sackhoff was awesome in it. Yeah. Everybody was awesome in it. And it's like those moments of me going, I think he was in Battlestar Galactica. That's kind of in my head sometimes. Yeah. I don't know how to describe it. It's just all of it was so good. And I'm sorry that people don't like this series because it's been fucking amazing.
Yep.
And we're picking up, I won't say what it is because it's kind of spoilery, but basically we're picking up a next gen storyline.
Ooh.
And revisiting it. And it was the irony is it's a next gen storyline that
when I read fan things, especially like in the Facebook groups and stuff like that, people have forgotten this one episode. People, it has to get brought up all the time to people, to new fans or even old fans who are like, why is it this way? And everybody's like, don't you remember this one episode of TNG that covered this whole thing? I mean, it's a big deal. It explains the whole universe, basically, for Star Trek. And they're revisiting it, which I'm like, yes! We've needed this back to remind these people exactly what this is. So, problem is not many people like Disco. So, I fucking love it. I don't know what people's problem is. I fucking love it. Well, I do know what people's problem is, but I don't have that problem, and I love it.
Yeah, I'm not a comics gate weirdo. I'm fine with a woman being in charge.
Yes. And I don't mind that she gets emotional, because that was a thing that, you know, like, Janeway was pretty cold sometimes, you know. Whereas Burnham is just like, look, I know you can be your best, and just is almost teary-eyed about it. And it's like, yeah, she's got a whole different, you know, style of command, you know, when it comes to dealing with her people, and her people love her for it. So, no, I love Burnham. I think it's a great series. And I'm sad that it only got 5 seasons instead of 7 or however many they wanted to do.
Yep. So that's it for me. I guess we're on to you, sir.
Yep. So along with Discovery, we decided to check out Palm Royale on Apple. This is a new Kristen Wiig series. It's a comedy, and it's fun. I mean, it's really fun. It takes place in the 60s in Palm Beach, Florida, where Kristen Wiig's character is just this Southern girl from Chattanooga who wants to join this country club because she's married into money, but it's not money that anybody's recognizing, and so they give her shit about it. You got a great cast. You got Laura Dern. You got Ricky Martin, who's really good in this. I was surprisingly good. Leslie Bibb, Allison Janney. Mindy Cohn was a little bit of a surprise appearance. And then you got Carol Burnett, who's just murdering it. This show, she's just hilarious. So, yeah, worth watching. If you like this kind of stuff, it's worth watching. It's fun. And I would have to say, though, we were lukewarm on it until this is the, and I'm going to call this out as a problem. We were lukewarm on it until about episode 4 or 5. And then things started to really churn. And we're like, oh, wait, that's what this is actually all about. It was such a slow burn getting to tell us what this whole thing is about that we were kind of like, is there something else we can watch right now instead of going back to Palm Royale? But we finally decided let's watch some more Palm Royale. We were so happy we got 4 and 5 right in a row because they were so, it actually hooked me in. So if you watch the first episode and didn't get hooked, maybe try to power through the second and third one. And I don't like that. I'd rather have stuff like Discovery where that first episode was a hook. You know, by the end of it, I was like, I'm in, I'm all in. You hit all the fun moments with all the action stuff. You dealt with a big problem for the last season, and you've cited an episode of Next Generation that people really, you know, forget about, but I really appreciate it. So yeah, it was that's what I'd like to see more often. But yeah, you can't always hook me in the first episode, I guess. And then of course, Daily Show, After Midnight, X-Men 97. You did Life Death. You did it as half of an episode. Life Death, one of the greatest Storm stories done in the 80s, and you basically hollowed it out, moved it, which I didn't mind you moving it. I didn't mind him moving it. I'm like, that makes sense for the context we're in. But they hollowed it out and made it just, yeah. I was so upset. By the end, I was like, you just flat out murdered one of the best Storm stories One that I loved. I mean, I couldn't sell it because I read the damn thing to death. I just loved it so much. And it's just such a wonderful story. And it was a real introduction to the character Forge and everything. Weird flex, though, that they do in this. Like, they talk about how, like, you get these images of old X-Men whenever Morph decides to turn into one. There was a photo on the wall of X-Factor when it was Jamie Madrox running it and, you know, leading the team, and Forge was on it. And I'm like, that's a weird little thing, because that happened in the 90s. And yeah, it's just kind of weird stuff all the way through. The whole show's weird. So that really bothered me, though. I'm like, you just gutted one of the best stories ever written. And it was a single issue, and it was one of the best ever written by Chris Claremont. And oh, it's kind of pissed, especially when it was half of an episode. The first half was Jubilee in dealing with some Mojo put her in a video game. So it was like an episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends dealing with Video Man in some ways. That's what it felt like to me. And then we get to the life-death part, and I'm like, okay, this is what I was waiting for, life-death. And it was gutted, and I was like, God damn it. Oh, well. I'm watching it so you don't have to, I guess.
Yeah, you are, from the sounds of it. Thank you for your sacrifice, sir.
So let's do some Tinseltown news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I am 100% certain that you, sir, are the one who posted this article. Iron Fist, give Finn Jones another chance as the Marvel hero.
I didn't, but I like it.
I do, too. it is an op-ed piece, so I won't read it out loud. Just saying that... Finn says, I would love to continue playing the character. I think there's a lot of room for growth, personally. Where I would like to see the reintroduction of the character would be something like a Heroes for Hire TV series. Good idea!
I would love that.
See that.
Yeah. I think that would be the most dynamic and fun way to reintroduce those characters. So,
if you are going to go down the route of introducing a new Iron Fist, male or female, Asian, whatever you want to do, just handle it the same way you handled when they introduced the new Iron Fist in the Marvel comics. Basically Danny was there as kind of a mentor. He was like, oh, you have the Iron Fist now. I'll step back and let you deal with whatever. But yeah, he was kind of there as a mentor. Though I didn't like all the sword being embedded in the guy's arm and stuff. I didn't care for that part, but everything else was cool. So yeah, that'd be a way to give Finn Jones another chance if you want, you know, if you need to change up who's playing it to make everybody happy, at least bring Finn Jones back for a minute. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
That's fair. Kevin Smith is remastering Dogma.
I'm so happy.
Yep. Remastered version of Dogma is coming out in 2024. Due to rights issues with Miramax, Dogma has been unable to stream or purchase on any digital platform. Smith's Instagram hinted at a 2024 release of a remastered version of Dogma, potentially ending the rights issue.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, it's not even really owned by Miramax. It's owned by, what's his name, the producer, who's in prison right now.
Oh, Weinstein.
Yeah, it's actually owned by Weinstein, and they were trying to get him to give it up. They were trying to buy the rights back from him, and they offered him one amount of money. He's like, no. It's like, really? Well, how about this amount of money? No. And Kevin's like, well, I'm out of money. I better you know, see if somebody else wants to invest. He's like, so I talked to Matt and Ben, and they invested. So they were like, this amount of money. He goes, no. And they said, okay, this amount. And he said, no. And that was the max amount they could invest and get actually make and figure they could actually make their money back on a remastered version. So Harvey must have relented at some point and said, okay, fine, I'll take the lower amount. Yeah. Because he basically cut off contact after that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, wonderful movie. Can't wait to own it again. I have a copy somewhere in my storage unit, and I don't know if I'm ever going to empty that goddamn 10 by 10. Olivia Colman quit working on a show called Heartstopper. Mm-hmm. She did the first two seasons. She has left for the third season, saying, I couldn't do number three. I couldn't fit it in. I feel awful about that. I feel like I was part of one of the most beautiful things I've ever been a part of. So it's based on a 2016 webcomic called Heartstopper. Mm-hmm. Stars Joe Locke as Charlie Spring, a high school student who falls head over heels for his classmate, Nick. Portrayed by Kit Connor, Coleman plays Sarah, mother of Nick. Mm. So, anyway.
That's a bummer.
It is. I haven't seen the show, but I have read the webcomic, oddly.
Yeah, it's one of my kids' favorite, both the show and the webcomic. So I'm peripherally aware.
Fair. Invincible Season 2 quietly recast Ezra Miller's character.
Oh, did they?
Yep. In the first season of Invincible, the Flash star, Ezra Miller, provided the voice of the mad scientist D.A. Sinclair. The character is back in the newest episode of Season 2, but Miller is no longer voicing the role. Per Entertainment Weekly, Eric Bauza from Bob's Burgers was brought in to voice the character, revealing that Miller was quietly replaced for the series. No official announcements were made about the recasting, but it comes after, well, Ezra Miller's life. And the things they've chosen to do with that life.
And this is Miller Watch.
Yes. This has been Miller Watch.
I was hoping we were done with Miller News, so I didn't make a sounder for it, but here we go. According to Trusted Insider, Daniel Richman, untitled Avengers 5 movie is expected to begin filming in 2025. News comes after a tumultuous year for Marvel Studios, which saw the company parting ways with Jonathan Majors. Following his being charged with and found guilty of assault and harassment. Kang was supposed to be the bad guy. We have no idea what they're going to do. The rest of this article is complete fucking speculation. But we do know from some dude whose name I've never heard before that it will begin filming in 2025.
But he did say that they were going to keep the Kang. They hadn't changed out of the Kang plot line yet.
Yeah.
To make it about Kang. So they've actually got a couple of names of people they're looking at to recast. One is Denzel Washington's kid to recast as Kang. I still firmly believe that you should cast Michael B. Jordan in the role and then let when Shuri shows up to fight as Black Panther, she could freak out. You know? And it's like, well, in your timeline, I was your uncle. In this timeline, I am Kang. I think that'd be fun. But that's just me. I'm glad it's happening, and I'm glad they're moving forward. And like we said, just recast him.
Yep. That's all. You know, if you could do Liev Schreiber if he wasn't going to do Star Wars, because if anybody but Liev Schreiber does the fucking Ahsoka, I'm going to lose my fucking mind.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's all I'm saying. Anyway, that's it for the news.
And that was Major's Watch. We got a Miller and a Major's Watch all in one episode. We're taking another break. When we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
Well, let's dive into something a little bit fun with some comic book news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Gail Simone's Uncanny X-Men will consist of 18 issues in its first year. What does that mean?
Oh,
they're coming
gosh.
Out every 3 weeks? Is that what that means?
Yeah.
About every 3 weeks. Well, yeah.
So for those who can't wait for Gail Simone and David Marquez's first issue of Uncanny X-Men coming in August, there's a lot more to come. Gail Simone's spotlight panel at WonderCon 2024. Gail shared as much, telling the audience there will be 18 issues of the series in its first year. That's a lot.
That is.
That is. I mean, it's not as much as fucking Spider-Man, but still.
No. Or this year of Wolverine and this whole Wolverine-Sabretooth war. That's two issues every month, and they're going for it. So, yeah.
Also shared in the panel was the fact that Simone's Uncanny X-Men will be a Southern Gothic tale set in Louisiana. Fans who love the new characters will be excited to hear that there will be four new young mutants who will show up in this book.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's it. If you can't wait till August to catch a glimpse of it, there will be a preview of the comic in the Free Comic Book Day From the Ashes sneak peek, which don't ask me, I don't have yet. There. I've said it. Okay. A cult horror comic is getting revived. Tuesday, Rebellion Developments confirmed that it will be publishing a new revival of Misty, one-shot anthology special titled Misty 2024 Special, will be published July 17th, will be available through British newsagents, comic shops, and the 2000 AD web store. The news was first announced over the weekend at WonderCon, at a panel by Birds of Prey and Batgirl writer Gail Simone. Yay, Gail Simone some more! Who is penning three of the four stories. So, yeah, we're going to have Carola Borelli. We're going to have Mariana Ignazi. Probably saying that wrong. It's going to be written, the fourth one will be written by Letty Wilson, who did Owl People. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. That's a lot of fun right there. And then Action Comics number one. No, the real number one with an 8.5 CGC rating. 8.5. Just sold for a record-setting $6 million on Thursday at Heritage Auctions. Mm. You know, I keep going through my stuff. I keep not finding one.
I know. I don't have it. I just recently went through all my boxes again. I don't have an Action Comics number one. No.
Yeah. That's nuts. But, a second copy... sold at the auction, breaking a different record, professionally restored to an apparent grade of 8. That comic sold for $576,000. That's the most ever for a restored comic. So two copies.
I'm curious about that process. What goes into restoring a comic? I pressing is almost a regular thing now.
Yep.
And I don't think that counts as restoring, so I'm just curious what went into restoring.
No, it's, I mean, they do chemical lifts, they do cleaning, they do pressing, they do steam pressing, and it's basically you're just taking as much of the age off as you can, you know?
Right.
They can do little minor rebuilds, they can fill holes, they can do stuff, but there, as you could see by the price on it, it is not as attractive as having one that hasn't been restored. Doing restoration on a comic really can fuck up the value quite a bit. You know, so, yep. But that's how it is. Anyway, if you've got a copy of Action Comics number one, by all means know that we are always accepting donations here at the Comic Book Podcast because that's something that could seriously help all of us out.
Even getting it professionally restored and selling it for $500,000 would really be a big deal.
Yeah, right now, $100 for something. What do I have to sell? I don't have anything to sell. I'm out of stuff. I've sold everything. So that's it for the news.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we read this week.
Ooh.
Joss?
Yeah, I didn't read anything in this week, you guys. I sucked. Aww. I know. I'm sorry.
Bummer.
I was well aware of you not visiting yesterday.
I know. Well, I looked out. Okay. I had grand plans. And then I got up and it was cold. And I looked outside and it was snowing. And I was like, I don't want to to go to Salt Lake today, so I didn't. Sorry.
That's fair. No, I totally understand. I was in Salt Lake, and I didn't want to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah.
How about you, Jeff? What'd
you read?
I went through Transformers 1 through 4 because they all got a second printing this last week. Transformers is not for me. You know? I mean, I'll say that right up here. It was not something I enjoyed watching as a kid very much. You know, it was on. I was like, well, you know, it's noises and colors, and I'll wait for Gatchaman. Because Battle of the Planets was my jam. Still
there
is.
There you go.
So anyway, I'd read that. And then Uncanny Valley. Went through that again because it's coming out this week. What a delightful book. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I told you guys the premise that basically this young man, turns out his grandpa is a cartoon. So he's a hybrid of human cartoon. And bad guys are coming to get him because they want to figure out what makes him tick. And then you meet Grandpa the cartoon. and yet it's so fucking good. It was so good. Mm-hmm. So Uncanny Valley, that's what I managed to read this week. What about you?
I picked up Deadpool number 1. This is the new edition from Cody Ziegler, who is currently doing Miles Morales Spider-Man and a new run on Spider-Punk. So I really wasn't thrilled. I didn't go in thinking it was going to suck. I went in with just my usual level of expectation for any comic book. And it didn't suck. I'm not thrilled by it. There's a lot of backstory to Deadpool that I don't understand at this point because other writers have had all kinds of fun with him. And in the end, I was like, it didn't motivate me enough to want to pick up the next issue. That's all. Maybe you'll be different. Maybe you like Cody Ziegler's work. And maybe you'll be different. Give it a shot. I will say the art's really good. And if you have been following Deadpool, you're going to enjoy it. Then I picked up, also read, The Avengers number 12. Finally, it's time to get involved in the fall of the House of X. The Avengers, under Iron Man's guidance, are doing fast surgical strikes against Orcus. And it's cool. Each time, they're also liberating these mutant detention centers, or as they called them, re-education centers. And they're liberating the mutants and bringing them up to their city that they are living in, their floating city. And the twist is that a former Avenger who I hadn't thought about in 20 plus years, 3D Man, is actually working with, you know, this is a real guy.
I know, real guy. I know. Aren't we all?
Yeah.
A little 3D?
Yeah, it was a weird flex back in the day. There was a guy who, you know, it was because of the age of 3D, they created this character 3D Man. But in later there was a guy named Triathlon who was basically, I mean, the whole time you're reading about him, because he appears in the Return of the Avengers, he was the whole thing about him, I'm like, well, he's 3D Man. Because 3D Man had three times of each of these things. And he's got three times of each of these things. They're physical aspects. Like three times the endurance, three times the strength, three times the agility.
Yep.
I think. So I'm like, well, that's 3D Man. He had three times. That was the whole shtick. And eventually it's revealed, yeah, he's actually a descendant of the original 3D Man or something like that. Anyway, he got ousted. I didn't know this part because I wasn't reading Avengers The Initiative. He got kicked to the curb, and now he's working for Orcus, and so he's actually thinking ahead. Because the thing is that he discovered the three times is not just the physical characteristics, it's also mental. There were other things about him that was like three times, amped up three times by the Triune Understanding, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, this guy, you don't want to fuck with him. And he's basically said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then you see at the end the strike that he's planned against the Avengers, and it was pretty good. And I thought, oh, all right, this is not going to be just a cakewalk for the Avengers, which I really like. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, as this is, this whole thing is basically part of wrapping up the whole House of X stuff, before we get to Gail Simone's run on Uncanny X-Men, which is what we're fucking waiting for. It's like, just ended already. Let's get to Gail Simone. But we still got, we got a whole vampire thing coming in a month, and we got all this other shit happening. So, we got to wait. That is it for me. But today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. It's time to give our picks of the week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, Joss, what are you looking forward to?
I don't know, you guys. Honestly, I had a hard time this week picking. But from Marvel Comics, there is a Black Widow trade paperback coming out. This is collecting issues 1 through 20 from back in 2014. From Nathan Edmondson. I've loved every Black Widow comic I've ever picked up. I am sure that I read all of these at the time that they came out, but that's been 10 years ago. So I'm going to pick this up and read them again because I'm sure that I will love them. How about you, Jeff? What are you picking up?
From Marvel, Ultimate X-Men number 2, Peach Momoko continues her run on an X-Men title. If you weren't paying attention, all of her Demon Days stuff was pretty much like that. Though it was, you know, different, but it was still, I like Peach's art style. I really do. So I'll be picking that one up. And then from DC, The Batman, First Night number 2. This is the second one in the Black Label series, in which we talk about Batman in the late 30s, 1930s. The Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that number 2 is coming out, and I'm looking forward to that. How about you, sir?
My Main Street picks this week, we've got Invincible Iron Man number 17, continuing the battle, Tony's fighting on his own against Orcus. I'm imagining he's doing this on the side, I guess, while the Avengers, while he's also leading the Avengers in their strikes.
Like you do.
But last issue, it ended with him getting his armor basically shut off or deactivated. Which happens to him in every fucking major fight he has to do.
You got
to
pay that monthly bill or they'll just pull service.
Exactly. Exactly. So while he's waiting for it to boot back up again, I guess we get kind of a trapped in his own armor kind of moment issue. So that'll be fun. And then I also picked Batman the First Night as my pick for DC, but I'm also going to bring up Tales of the Titans. This was a 4-part series that came out when we got the new Titan stuff that launched a few months ago. And this was 4 issues. It covers individual members of the Titans, Starfire, Donna, Beast Boy. You can, you know, check it out. And this is coming out in trade for $16.99 from DC this week. For my indie picks this week, also a trade coming out from Image Comics, Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips, The Enfield Gang Massacre, collecting issues 1 through 6 of Enfield Gang Massacre. This is a Western, this is a cowboy comic, but with Jacob Phillips behind it, it's going to look really cinematic. Montgomery Enfield and his gang of outlaws find themselves in the crosshairs of an aging Texas Ranger in a newborn county that's hungry for law by any means necessary. So, looks like a lot of fun. And from Vault Comics, Unnatural Order number 4 finally coming out. This one, they haven't announced that it's a limited series. They're calling this the end of the first arc, or we're coming up to the end of the first arc. So this is supposed to continue. But they're taking their time putting these out. They come out about every 2 months. But they're so good. It's such a great idea that I'm like, I'm willing to wait. I'm patient. I'm willing to wait for this one. How about you, Jeff? What are your indie picks?
From Boom, Uncanny Valley number 1. Yay! Pick it up. Seriously, you're just gonna. It's just fun. It's fun, fun, fun. You know, it's not your dark, serious, broody comic book. It is a fun to read comic book, which we need more of, and I'm happy to stoop for this one. And this is one I am so surprised you didn't pick. From the mind of literary icon Barry Gifford, internationally renowned creator of Wild at Heart and co-writer of David Lynch's neo-noir masterpiece Lost Highway, Night People, number one, is a pulsating roadmap of American subconscious, where neon-lit southern nights give way to lipstick, sweat, and blood, and the odd, the innocent, and the evil are all fellow travelers down an interstate of dark, elusive dreams. Hey! This looks like fun.
Yeah.
This
no,
is
I picked it.
Dave Lynch's buddy.
Because this is a not a reprint, but a second run for the print of Night People number one. So I picked it last month and saw it on the list. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot to pick that up, or didn't see it on the shelf, or ignored it on the shelf.
It sold out pretty quick. It was gone almost instantly. And that's one of the reasons
when I don't come in on a Wednesday, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's one of the reasons for you guys to talk to your comic book retailer early when you want something, because if we don't hear noise about it, we don't buy very many of it.
Right.
You know, and if we don't buy very many of it a couple of months out, they don't print very many of it. And if they don't print very many of it, I don't have enough to go around when people are finally like, hey, this came out last week. Can I have two copies? It's like, no. No, where the fuck were you last month? I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is you got to get ahead. That's why we do here at this show, the public service of Picks of the Future.
Yes.
Yeah.
But before we do that, what are you looking forward to, Joss, on your Indie Picks?
So Indie Picks this week, The Cabinet number 3 is coming out. I have 1 and 2 sitting on the very top of my stack, so I'm going to get those read and hopefully make it down to Salt Lake, because the weather next weekend is supposed to be much nicer than it was this weekend.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into the TARDIS and give our pick of the future. All right, Joss, what's your pick for the future?
All right. As I was scrolling through, I found from Dark Horse that they are going to be doing Neil Gaiman's Anansi Boys. It's a faithfully adapted from the original novel comic book series. So I love Anansi Boys. I love that story from Neil Gaiman anyway. Anansi is the spider, the trickster god of African folklore. And there's and he fathered Fat Charlie Nancy. And he has a twin brother he's never met, which kicks off a reality-spanning odyssey of sibling rivalry, jealous deities, and one poor soul who will realize what it means to be a god. Mm-hmm. It's a great novel. If you've never read the novel, it's fantastic. I'm excited. I've always liked Neil Gaiman's comic book stuff, so to see this adapted into a comic book form is going to be awesome. How about you, Jeff?
Well, it's important.
Yes.
It's important that you understand how much this means to me. But it's Gatchaman number one. Triumphant return of Gatchaman. The iconic Japanese animated franchise of a 5-member bird-themed superhero team known to Western audiences as Battle of the Planets. G-Force, 5 incredible young people with superpowers. And then the rest of the intro is just bullshit.
Yes.
Watching over them from Center Neptune, 7 Zark 7. Watching, warning, against surprise attack by alien galaxies from beyond space, which makes no sense.
Yes.
But it was the 70s.
It was the 70s, and we're trying to capture the Star Wars fans, get them involved. Yeah, they did there was a G-Force or Battle of the Planets run in the mid-2000s, early 2000s. Dynamite owned it, owned the rights for that moment. And Alex Ross was heavily involved in getting it pushed out there because he was a fan as a kid like we were. And he used the names and stuff, but boy, it was definitely written for grown-ups when I read this issue. Like, the shot of Jason hanging out, you know, waiting for the call to come do G-Force stuff, and he's laying in bed naked with some naked ladies on him. And I was like, oh, well, we never saw that, and we suspected that in the series, but we never saw that.
Yep.
This is Gatchaman.
Yeah, there's no, they don't, all that space shit was just for American audiences.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like I was, when you and I were talking about it at the shop on Friday, my entire childhood, well into my 20s, anytime I doodled a spaceship, it looked like the Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like their spaceship. They were, to me, as a kid, the science fiction that I thought that I wanted. Watching it again as an adult, I know better now that the stuff they dumped on America was garbage. You know, but I got a soft spot in my heart for these five, and I'm really looking forward to reading this, because it's being written by Colin Bunn, for Christ's sake. It's Chris Bautista's doing the art. He's pretty good. But yeah, Colin Bunn, usually I'd say 19 out of 20 things he does, they're top shelf. So here's to hoping.
Now, this is coming from Mad Cave Studios. So guys, if you're excited by this, you need to get into your local comic book shop and get an order in for it, because we can take orders now for these books.
Yep. It's in my hold.
Yep.
It should be in yours.
I went to add it to mine and saw that it was already added. I'm like, thank you, Jeff. Yep.
Yeah, it's the covers are great. I mean, the whole, it's just, can't wait.
So good.
So good.
Next. For me, coming out in June, from DC Comics. So, to preface this, there was a pretty big, Elseworlds started with a bang back in the 80s, right? Was Elseworlds, or maybe the 90s. It started out in the 90s with a bang, with a little story called Gotham by Gaslight, which put Bruce Wayne in that era, the turn of the century, late 1800s era. Who should escape England and come to Gotham? You had Jack the Ripper.
Fun.
And this was such a great story because it was Mike Mignola doing the artwork. This was pre him doing anything with Hellboy. Just an incredible story. And now we're going to do, we're starting out, written by Andy Diggle, who's an amazing writer, Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age. When a mysterious meteor falls on the wide open plains of the Midwest, it will unleash a chain of events that find Gotham's bizarre Batman contending with not just the twin threats of the Catwoman and a mysterious international assassin, but also the emergence of superhuman beings beyond all comprehension. And so this
they
is
may be beyond comprehension, but are they beyond the edge of space?
Beyond space. Anyway, showcasing bold new visions of the once familiar heroes from the 19th century DC universe. So, yeah, I'm like, yes, yes, please, yes, please. Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age. Check that out. And that's it for us this week. Anything else, guys?
Nothing.
I got nothing. I'm all cut up. We are once again continuing to, apparently I have something. Apparently we're keeping the fundraiser going. You can pop over to the Comic Book Podcast and click on the fundraiser and do your part. We're trying very, very, very hard, as much as time allows right now, to raise money to move us into a little office we could turn into a studio. It's an important piece of growth. If we can't quite do that, trust me, I got backup plan after backup plan. But if you go to the Comic Book Podcast and you click on that, we've got spiffs. I've got people that are going to be on the show because they gave at certain amounts. So we will be having guests coming up in a couple of months. It's all going to be a lot of fun. So look forward to that. I hope you guys can help us out. And then what I'll do right now is let JC pitch Patreon.
That's right. Let me tell you, this week on Patreon, if you thought the Pisker stuff was controversial and we had a good discussion about that, check us out this week on Patreon. Who created Wolverine? Someone has inserted himself into that mix, and we're going to have a talk about that. That's this week on Patreon, patreon.com/defendmedia. Join us, won't you? Join our Patreon squad. Help us turn it into a Patreon platoon. This is where how we keep the proverbial lights on for this show. That's it. So I will say, as I always do, until Deadpool has a dog he calls a kid, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard.